All right, this is tape 3, side A. This is October 27th, 2003. I had a question about religion. We hadn't talked about that. That question slipped by. I was wondering, what impact, if any, did religion have on you and your family when you were growing up?
Okay, so just like most of the vast majority of Japanese, our family, my parents are technically Buddhists, but it doesn't mean much, actually. It's more social than anything. For example, Buddhism probably might have something to do with your life, only for your funeral or wedding, probably. But so, for example, I never visited temples for religious purposes. So the minimum of religion to my life is like the impact of religion to my life is probably next to zero.
Right.
And so yeah, that's probably the simplest answer.
Okay. All right. What was the startup package that they gave you here?
So startup package this place gives is very a little different from almost all other places that I was offered a job. Most of the places say, okay, we have this much of fund which you can use for any way you want. But here, I was asked to submit a list of heavy equipments that I need, such as chromatography machines and so on and so forth. Then they guarantee that they'll buy anything we need. Then they also guaranteed that they will pay my salary as well as salary of two people, one technician and one postdoc usually, or student, until we get major grant, that is either NIH grant or NSF. And that's the standard for the Hajj. So depending on how soon a faculty member gets the grant, it can be very cheap or very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of open-ended offer. And that's what I got. And I fortunately received NIH grant in the first round, so I'm sure it was not very expensive for the division.
Right. And if you would, talk a little bit about your current research.
Sure. So my research, the central interest of my research in big picture, I should say, or in a long-term sense, is to understand how chromatin structure is regulated and how regulation of chromatin affects other processes, some processes inside cells, such as transcription, recombination, repair, and replication. And as a junior faculty member, I had to concentrate on a small number of things. Initially focused on a couple of factors that are known to regulate chromatin structure, and we're trying to understand what they do and how they function inside the cells. That's been the major focus of our laboratory.
Right. Okay. And you had, well, here, let me back up a little bit. We were talking about your lab.
Mm-hmm.
What was the hardest part about setting up your lab?
Hardest part? It's not that I had a lot of hard time. I wouldn't say it was easy. First couple of years, looking back, I would say was the hardest. Probably the most difficult thing is to see whether or not we are, as a lab, on the right track in science-wide term. So when I was a postdoc, for example, I mean, it's kind of strange that I started to think about it more seriously as a PI, but as a postdoc student, you know, I should have had the same kind of thoughts, but I never had a trouble. I was always happy just working as hard as I could to do research, and I did have situations that I had to make decisions on the directions, and I didn't have any problem with that. I always took the most logical, to me at least, path and how, no matter how hard it was. And I never had trouble convincing myself that I was on the right track. And after being PI, I had a few occasions that I woke up at night and had to really got this feeling that I was not sure if I was on the right track. Then I had to really think about it, then go one by one, what we have, what we know, what we are planning to do, then convince myself that we are on the right track, then falling asleep.
Mm-hmm.
It never happened to me. So that was probably the hardest, if you will, thing. Even though I didn't feel like it's really tough for me. But it is a little strange that after becoming PI, I started to think about that kind of thing.
Right.
Because as a PI or postdoc, you always have to be, wanna be anyway, on the right track. And I never thought about it.
Right. How do you run your lab? How do you set it up? In other words, journal clubs or meetings?
So currently we are having weekly lab meeting. My laboratory is not very big, that's the way I like. So every other week we have group meeting, that is internal lab meeting. We pretty much know what we are working on, so this is opportunity though to let everybody know what kind of technical problems we have, what kind of directions we're trying to go. So it's very informal, and people jump on each other freely. Every other week, we have joint lab meeting. So this was sort of, I took the idea from one of the senior investigators here. His lab prefers to do one round of joint lab meeting with another lab, and after one round, it's over, and then maybe come back and do the same thing in a year or two. By doing this, you can get feedbacks from people who usually don't think about that kind of thing, so that you can get fresh ideas. And it's semi-informal, so it's good for good training for students also. And you don't have to listen to the same kind of things over and over again, because it's just one round at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And my students really liked it. So we're doing this, and this week, actually, we are going to start a joint lab meeting with another lab that have similar interest. And after this group meeting, probably I look for another partner. And at the end of each lab meeting, we have two things to do. One is, on 1 week, we'll do so-called two-minute journal club. So this, again, was taken from the same senior principal investigator. That is, the aim of this is to give habit for students to go over a lot of journals. So not just papers of our interest, but in a more broad view. So people would go through table of contents for many different journals, including Nature Science, those journals that have very broad aspects of science. And people, in 2 minutes, every single person introduces one paper in a quick way. So people don't have to read in detail. And it can be physics or chemistry or math or social thing.
Mm.
So some people talk about some crazy discovery someone made, or it can be, in an extreme case, it can be from Yahoo News,
mm-hmm.
If it's not about science, or it can be science policy. Basically, the idea is it can be anything interesting, and to me, this is a need for students to have a habit of going through a lot of different journals on a regular basis. And every other week, we have more regular, formal journal club. So one person picks up a paper or two, and we go into detail.
Right.
So that's all we have for regular thing. I don't want to take away a lot of bench time from my students, so I try to limit that once a week.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Muna. All right, we're back. This one's really loud. But in any case, does your research have an overriding aim or goal?
Overriding?
Yeah, I mean, do you wake up in the morning thinking, okay, in 3 years I've got to hit this, and then I'm going to move on in that and go to this?
Yes, so I think a lot about not 3 years, but 5-10 years. So, as I said, so this is sort of a dilemma I think a lot of people have. For junior faculty members, I was told, and I agreed, that it's very important to focus on small number of things, because lab hasn't established yet, everybody is inexperienced. So if you dilute too much, it's hard to get things done. So that's what we have been doing. We have been focusing on these two factors, basically, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this line of work will be fruitful, productive for next a few years. But I also know that I have to start thinking about expanding, if you will, our area, so that we won't, because if you keep working on one thing for a long time, what can happen, is it gets to more and more and more into detail, and at the end, nobody cares because it's so much detail.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to keep an option open. Ideally, I want to have two things going on in the lab so that if one is not doing well, the other can help. So, yes, in the short answer, it was a long answer, but I do have something like that in my mind. And the center of my interest is still chromatin. And I came to realize what kind of researcher I am. So it's been my learning process. So what I think I'll do well is to come up with one big project, big problem that's hard to solve, and stay with it, and keep attacking, mm-hmm. until something happens. So in that sense, I have been looking for something big problem to work on. And right now, I'm mostly interested in chromatin assembly and how it's regulated. And I think that's going to be our second branch, hopefully.
Oh, okay. And what are the long and or short-term of applications of your work with a real potential?
Application, you mean clinical or?
Yeah, clinical.
Okay. I know this sounds odd, but there can be a lot of applications. For example, the class of factors I'm working on are known to be abnormally regulated in some kind of leukemia.
Mm-hmm.
And the research we are doing might give us some hints on how activity of those factors can be regulated. And that can give us some clue to how to deal with this type of leukemia and so on and so forth. And chromatin assembly itself, if that line of work pans out, is involved in many different things, including cancers. I'm pretty sure that kind of things. Application can be can follow our work, though for everyday work I'm not thinking about that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I'm against applying our work or anything like that, but what I'm trying to do is to think from biological point of view, the most logical thing, the thing that's most interesting for us. Of course, when we write grant, we emphasize how useful our work can be.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say we're lying, but for everyday, doing everyday work, I really don't think about that much. Of course, given that we are using taxpayers' money, and also we are getting, we're living by doing what we like to do, it would be great if we can pay back some to the society.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something, to be honest, I think a lot about every day.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about your responsibilities. So we'll go to a different part of this, mm-hmm. the question set now. You have a lot of different responsibilities. What do you spend the bulk of your time doing, though, as a PI?
Probably it's 50-50 between my own research and helping my students. Because of the way it's set up, I can still work at the bench. I work a lot. and probably I work as much as some postdocs at the bench, which is good and bad. I know that because as a PI, probably the most important thing is to keep make sure that all the people in my lab are happy and get enough support. But so I spend a lot of time talking to students and postdoc and technician, even though I've been pretty fortunate that the old people in my lab are pretty good. I've been very, very picky. So most of the people I don't have to babysit at all. So I, with senior grad students, probably I talk in detail once a week, once every other week kind of thing. When something comes up, of course, we sit down and talk in detail, or when we write papers, we do that a lot. But on everyday basis, it's not a lot of work for me. And with technician, it's a little different. I work with her a lot because she's not very experienced in it. And with postdoc, it's even less. We talk to him occasionally, and he wants to be left alone, which is understandable. I was like that. And we sit down and talk in detail, maybe once a month, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, we have a lot of teaching. Oh, well, a little bit of teaching. Well, I said a lot because teaching is coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
but actually, compared outside, it's nothing. I know that. A lot other thing that take up a lot of time is reviewing papers for journals, and sometimes we get a lot of time consumed on committees. Mm-hmm. Even though Hutch is very good at keeping junior faculties out from heavy committee duties, so it's not a big part of my life.
Right. How much teaching do you do?
I'm in charge of one half course since 3 years ago. This is about chromatin and transcription. This is a 5-week course, so I have to be there and twice a week, 90 minutes each, I think. And also, I teach 1/3 of that. So, and then I'm responsible for grading and so on and so forth. So it's a little bit over, a little bit less than 2 months. So though, basically in November and end of October to December, beginning of December, it's hard to do anything else because it's Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I have to be in the class all mm-hmm. the time. But I didn't know this, but I enjoyed teaching quite a bit, so it's not too bad.
Mm-hmm. part of your responsibilities is to travel as well. How often do you travel during a year?
Yeah, I actually don't go to meetings as much as I should, probably. I think a lot of people have this dilemma. On one hand, it's good to go to meetings and sort of advertise what you do so that you can recruit good postdocs and so on and so forth. On the other hand, a lot of people want to stay in the lab and get the research done, and it's a big dilemma for a lot of junior faculty members. And I go to one or two big meetings in summer. Other than that, unless I'm invited, I don't go.
Mm-hmm.
So probably I go, average 2 or 3 meetings a year.
Okay.
And in addition to that, I occasionally get invited to seminars. So I travel, though I'm pretty sure I travel less than 5-6 times a year for that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is increasing now. So I probably have to do that part a little bit more.
You mentioned bench work and doing it. Most of the people that I speak with don't do bench work anymore. I mean, what's the secret? How do you still continue to do it?
Part of that is, a lot of that is actually because the way Hutch is set up. So for example, this place, it's very clear that the science has the highest priority. So administrative duties are unbelievably light. For example, faculty meetings for administration is once a year or twice a year probably at the most.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's because people know we won't go if it's more frequent. And a lot of things are done by chat or email or telephone, and that's it. And teaching, as I said, you know, a little bit over a month, a year, some people don't teach. So even senior PIs are doing experiments at the Hutch. Though not so many people do experiments as much as I do. Part of that may be because I live like postdocs. I usually show up to the lab between 10 and 11 and stay here until midnight or 1. And very often when I come back, I come to the lab, students have something to talk to me, and I sit down and do, you know, troubleshooting with them, do, and then go through emails, then do other stuff. Or when I have a rotation student, I have to work with them very closely. And very often I can do big experiments only after everybody's home, so after dinner. So from 7 to midnight is my free time. Very often I run chromatography column or do time course experiments during the time.
Right.
So otherwise, if say I had a child and I had to go home at 5, there's no way I could have done this.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I have to go home at 8 or 10, it would have been hard.
Right. Yeah, I want to make clear too that your girlfriend of 20 years lives in San Francisco. I think we might have mentioned that earlier as well. And you don't have any children. Was there a two-body problem, though? I mean, was there a time when you were trying to get in one place together, or did you?
No. So actually, when I was offered a job here, when we were doing job hunting, we were sort of doing together, and we had three places that we got joint offers, including here. My girlfriend got two offers at the University of Washington as an assistant professor, and she didn't take them because she just didn't like the job.
Right.
And over 20 years is long enough for me to learn that I whatever I think or do have nothing to do with what she does.
Right.
So she does what she wants to do, and I'm perfectly fine with that.
Right.
So, I mean, she might come to Seattle, move up to Seattle sometime, or it may never happen. Either way, I'm fine, as long as she's fine.
Right.
She's happy. And, you know, throughout this period, we lived together for some years, and then lived separately for some years, and so on and so forth. And it's not really a problem. I mean, it would be horrible, I think, if she has to live in Seattle just to be with me, and if she stays home unhappily, I'll probably run away. I just can't live like that. And if she has to live in, I don't know, East Coast to be happy, I'll be happy with that.
Right.
Right now, it's at least in the same time zone and everything. I can't complain. I'm very happy.
Yeah. You've mentioned administrative responsibilities already. Some committees. Could you tell me maybe precisely what committees you're on?
Oh, the committees I have been, one of the big ones was admission committee for graduate students.
Mm-hmm.
So in that, we had to read like 400 applications in detail and rank them all, then get together and rank them all again and come up with some consensus and decide how many students we offered graduate school positions.
Mm-hmm.
That took me, basically wiped out one week of my time because I had to read all of those applications and rank them, including their own research interest recommendation letters and so on and so forth. Others are not that big. This year I will be helping training grant evaluation for graduate students. This one I probably have to again read some letters and research interests and interview students and so on and so forth. It won't be too bad. Other things, we have graduate school students symposium once a year. That is, there's an award that's established after Hal Weintraub was one of the founding members of this Basic Sciences Division. And basically, top students from all over the countries are invited here and have one day symposium. And I was serving as one of the faculty committee members there for a few years, involved in selection of candidates.
Okay. Funding. What are the sources of your funding right now?
The biggest funding is coming from NIH. And after about the time Pew ran out, I started receiving funds from Leukemia and the Lymphoma Society also, which covers basically most of my salary. So that freed up some money from NIH. So those two are my current major fundings.
Mm-hmm. Now, you got a NIH grant right from the start.
Right.
And what do you attribute that to? Had you done much grant writing before then?
No. So I came to the U.S. to NIH straight. So I never even saw. I didn't even know how grants look like, how thick it is, or what should be written. Then I read my grant, first grant application, it's not very well written. I don't think I'm a good grant writer. The reason why I got funding, I think, was largely because of what I did as a postdoc. It was written in a critique that, you know, this grant, I didn't say it's not very well written, but it's very ambitious and blah, blah, blah. But because this guy has done quite a bit as a postdoc, maybe, you know, there's a benefit of doubt. This guy probably will do fine. That was what was written, and I'm pretty sure that was a big reason.
Mm-hmm.
And grant writing was a lot of work, actually. And one thing that was very good for me was a few senior investigators here volunteered to read my grant and gave me very straight, honest criticism. That was great help.
Mm-hmm.
Especially one of them, Dan Gotchling, sat down with me for over 2 hours, just basically crossing out everything bad that I wrote. And that I'm sure helped my grant a lot.
Right. Besides being very humbling. How secure is your funding now? Are you?
I'm actually just done with the first competitive renewal, and I got okay number. It's not spectacular. The problem is right now, to feel safe, you have to have a spectacular number, like top 10% or something like that. I'm not there yet. So I talked to my grant officer at the NIH, and I was told, unless something outrageous happens, I should be fine. I should be able to get renewal. So I'm not rewriting it. If something happens, though, Hutch, another great thing about the Hutch is this place has a system called interim funding. So for one year, I can get exact same size of grant money from the Hutch.
Right.
So I don't have to fire anyone. And as long as I come back to, I get the money back in a year, which is easier after you get critique, and if the score is not too bad to start with, just by incorporating some of the criticism, you can easily raise your points. So I'm not that worried about that right now.
Right.
So Hutch, I actually don't know if this is the case for every division, but the support, I think, is just unbelievable.
It sounds like that's an incredible safety net to have.
Right.
And it allows you, of course, to concentrate again on what you're there for.
Right, right. Otherwise, I have to rewrite just to be on the safe side.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked if I want to do it, but then also officer said that it's given that it's likely that I will get funded, maybe it's a waste of time. So I didn't bother doing that.
Right.
And the senior investigator said, oh, don't worry about it. And a lot of even senior people rely on this, so it's not like getting this is going to hurt me or anything like that.
A black mark or anything.
Right.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you concern yourself day to day about funding? I mean, you have a lot of different concerns, obviously, floating in and out. But how much
about funding, I don't think about it at all, usually. Mm-hmm. Once a month, I get a report of how much money we have spent. And that's only the time I care about money. Mm-hmm. I know I have to write another grant sooner or later to get. So in a sense, I probably worry about it a little bit somewhere deep down. But on an everyday basis, I try not to think about it because it doesn't help.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe one or two.
Okay. Another part of your job is writing articles. Describe, mm-hmm. if you would, the writing process in your lab for journal articles. How do they originate, and then how do you get them through?
So for students, my postdoc has not written a paper yet, but for students, I ask them to write the whole thing first. We, of course, sit down. I ask them to give me a frame first, introduction, and especially this results section, how to order data. Of course, before that, we talk on regular basis and sit down, okay, maybe you need this and that to wrap up a story. Then students write, and I sit down and correct them. And I try not to actually write the sentences so that they just convert to what I write. Instead, I try to point out, say, for example, this part is not logical, or this is not clear, you have to rewrite, and let them think, mm-hmm. which is more painful and takes longer time, but this is part of training, so I have to do that. And but so far I have been pretty fortunate that the students have been pretty good about writing, and when I write, because I'm not a native speaker, I ask students to check my writing, mm-hmm. I mean grammars, very often like that, or you know, a singular and the plural, or tense is not matching within a sentence or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been pretty easy. That was a concern though, to be a PR as a foreigner. Writing, I knew writing is a big part of it, and I knew I have to correct writing of American students, mm-hmm. And I was not sure if I could do it, and it's a lot easier than I thought.
Right. And what do you think that is? Because your own knowledge of English, it seems to me you speak it very well.
I think my writing got a lot better after I wrote NIH grant. That was big. That made a huge difference.
Mm.
And I could write short sentences, of course, but to write logically or to, I don't know, write in a way that would push a paper from one journal over to another, I don't think I'm there yet. But fortunately in science, you don't have to write to move people. The most important thing is to be logical and clear. And that, I think, I learned during writing my NIH grant. I think it made a huge difference, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Right after that, I had to write something, and some small book chapter or something, and I sent it to my previous boss, Carl Wu, and he said he's surprised that my writing improved so much.
Oh, yeah.
And I was pretty sure that was due to my NIH grant writing.
Right. You've described the lab management styles of some of your mentors. I was, mm-hmm. wondering, how would you describe your own lab management style?
I think it's pretty laid back. And I try to, so one thing I decided is I'm not very good at pressuring people, so it's rare. I haven't done anything except for one case to tell people that they're not working hard enough, because so there are, I think, two ways to go. One is to keep pressure constantly, but this way you have to do it constantly, otherwise it won't work.
Right.
And it takes up a lot of energy, and I knew I won't be able to do that. So what I'm hoping to do is to keep encouraging people.
Mm-hmm.
So when something good happens, tell them how great it is. And of course, everybody goes through good and bad times, so you cannot do that all the time. But it's very clear that for students, first couple of years may be a little hard, but once they commit themselves into projects, and they can sort of gain a state that this is my life, this is part of my life, a big part of my life. I really want to get this to be done, and my goal is to get every student to that state. And once they get to that state, it's easy, because all I have to care about is how to talk to them and decide what the best way to get things done might be. And I've seen a couple of students reaching that state. That's probably the biggest pleasure as a PI, mm-hmm. to see. So I'm hoping that this works for most of them. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. I know that PIs very often say that they're not trained as managers. You know, they do a lot
right.
of bench work. Was there anything here at the Hutch or any other aid that helped you become a better manager or is helping you become a better manager?
I don't think there's anything. Though, because, as you know, I like to talk. I very often talk to other senior PIs, other PIs about love management. And one thing that sort of relieved me was a lot of very good scientists said, oh, I made huge mistakes in the past. They were very honest about it. They love talking about it,
yeah.
actually. And that was fun. And also here, sort of irregular, but once a year or so, the division pays money for junior faculty members to get together and sort of exchange gossips or whatever, mm-hmm. You know, see how things are. I think that started a few years ago, and that may be a form of help, if you will. And there's a thing called mentoring system. So I have a few senior full members who are my mentors, and they're supposed to get to, you know, get together with me once a year and see how things go. But because I talk to them all the time, or they're on committees of my students, and so on and so forth. I don't have anything formal, but I know if they think there's a problem, they actually sit down and talk to junior faculty members in a real detailed way.
Mm-hmm.
So this is sort of like no news is a good news kind of deal. Mm-hmm. So I know that I'm not having much of a problem from their point of view, in a sense. And I know, I mean, sometimes when someone is trapped in wrong direction, obvious way, those mentors actually suggest changes in directions. Of course, nobody can force any PIs to change directions, but they make suggestions and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big part of what I have been getting so far, I think. But it's probably a good thing to have,
mm-hmm.
Even though I was a little, I thought it's awkward that even though we are junior, we are principal investigators, and having mentors, sort of, if you have to rely on mentors, you're not independent.
Right.
So I remember when Mark Gurdian, our director, asked me about mentor, I said, mentor? And he said, oh, let's talk about it later. So I didn't have mentors until late. But, I mean, it's probably not a bad thing to have.
Yeah, if people want it.
Right.
And what is your greatest strength as the head of your lab?
Strength. Probably, I don't know. I'm not very good at saying what's good about me, but I think I'm reasonably good at being patient when I have to be. And, oh, the other thing might be I'm very honest, because I know I cannot lie. So I just even try to lie or hide something.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to be honest to students. That may be a good thing. And I don't know. Oh, probably I'm good at being positive. And yeah, that's about it, I think.
And you provide several services, I assume, to your professional community, things like study sections, perhaps, or editorial boards. Do you do any of those things? Or
for study sections, I was asked to do a few times, but when I was really junior, and I said, sorry, I'm just trying to establish myself. I haven't done that. I'm ready to do ad hoc thing, and I haven't gotten anybody contact me, so I have not done that. I heard doing ad hoc study section is actually a very good experience, so I'm ready to do it. For journals, I'm not on editorial board on any journal, but I review a lot of papers, and it's increasing, probably several per month. I usually have some paper that I'm reviewing all the time, and that takes up quite a bit of time. But at the same time, it's good for us to know what's going on, because papers are from a similar research area, and they constantly ask students and postdoc to review papers, so it's a pretty good experience for them also.
Right. Just a few other questions on this part of the question set. It's not really a responsibility, but you've already talked about your girlfriend and having, you know, carrying out this sort of long-distance relationship. How do you negotiate the demands of work and family life? I mean, do you find that...
We actually don't. I do whatever I want to do, and she knows that for me... science comes first, and it's a little bit hard to explain. She's the most unsocial person I know
okay.
in my life, and she's not that interested in outside world, and I'm included in outside world, even though I'm in a special position. So she knows if I, she doesn't want to be cared too much from me. So if I take care of her too much, she will run away, I'm pretty sure. She wants me to be around, but it's not like she wants my attention all the time. She's like a cat, I think. For example, when we go for vacation, because I don't work, I have too much energy, and I take care of her too much, like second day or first day sometimes, she said, you should never retire, because I just cannot, you know, believe living together all the time.
Right.
Don't stay around too much. So because of that, it's really easy. For example, when she comes here to Seattle, it's usually Friday night, and she stays until Monday morning, and I work full day on Saturday and part of the day on Sunday, and she does whatever she wants to do, gardening, basically, usually. Mm-hmm. And she's perfectly happy that I'm not around. And when I go there, of course, I'm around all the time. So I never had trouble sort of finding compromise between private life and science.
Right. Now, do you find that you go to her, or that she's coming to Seattle more often, or is that fairly...
We take turns. Even though when I go there, it's usually I take the last flight on Saturday and stay there one full day on Sunday and fly back on Monday. Right. Whereas when she comes in on Friday night, so one more day.
Right.
And because she's in a company, it's easy to do in that way.
Yeah. Let me put this over.